welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. January 25th, 2017 marked the 72nd anniversary of water fluoridation, the process of adding fluoride chemicals to the public drinking water supplies, intending to reduce tooth decay. The long-term human health effects from consuming fluoridated water, such as reduction of intelligence, dental fluorosis, and bone frailty, were examined in depth on this show. 5 years ago, a New York City councilman introduced a bill that would end the process of treating people with sodium fluoride through the public drinking water system. The bill was met with propaganda by the Village Voice and was also reported with carefully parroted pro-fluoride ideology from other outlets. For example, one public radio script read, quote, "A city council member wants New Yorkers to brush their teeth and not rely on the public water system to provide fluoride for healthy teeth," end quote. The writing of that sentence is part of the problem, quote, "and not rely on the public water system to provide fluoride for healthy teeth," end quote. I don't think that report ruffled any feathers. As many know, fluoride doesn't contribute to healthy teeth. In fact, according to the majority of in-depth studies, sodium fluoride treating the body internally through the public water system does the opposite. 90% of Western Europe has rejected water fluoridation. In a 2014 report for the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation, Rita Barnett Rose, associate law professor at Chapman University, argued, quote, "The cessation of all compulsory water fluoridation schemes should be the goal of all public health agencies, ethical lawmakers, and informed citizens." We hear from two past interviews. First, from Paul Connett, professor emeritus in environmental chemistry at St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York. For the past 30 years, Paul has put his scientific knowledge to work by helping communities around the world understand the science of controversial issues such as incineration and fluoridation. He's the author of The Zero Waste Solution and The Case Against Fluoride. Let's have a listen. Professor Paul Connett, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be on.
Well, it's a very interesting turn of events here with this legislation that's being proposed here for New York City by City Councilman Peter Vallone. He's proposing legislation to get the fluoride out of the water, out of the drinking water, I suspect, Manhattan, Kings, and Queens County.
Yeah, well, it's an excellent idea, and it's passed through its time. It should never have started, but having started, it should have been stopped years ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so what has come out of this, interestingly, is the editorials in the New York Press, the Gothamist, the Village Voice, and the Daily News. You just start with the Village Voice. This is Sergio Hernandez writing this story. It's titled, "Peter Vallone, Fluoride-Hating Councilman, Wants Your Teeth to Rot." A city councilman from Queens apparently wants your teeth to rot and fall out. The Daily News says Councilman Peter Vallone is planning to introduce a bill that would end New York's 45-year practice of adding fluoride to its tap water, citing safety concerns and comparing the mineral to prescription antidepressants. There are a few things wrong just in this sentence here. First of all, the idea that without fluoride in the water, your teeth will rot, that's false. Comparing, he called it a mineral, and I don't think that's true. Calcium fluoride is the mineral, and sodium fluoride, which they're putting in the drinking water, is the hazardous waste.
Yeah, it really typifies the outburst that you get when anybody has the temerity to suggest that this foolish practice be stopped. They don't have any substantial arguments. the people that are most vociferous for this practice have usually read least amount of the literature. And really, they're just aping two things. They're aping the authority of endorsements. You know, the CDC says this, the ADA says this, it must be true, and also aping the notion that the people opposed to fluoridation are a bunch of crazy nitwits a la Dr. Strangelove. In fact, some of the people that scream loudest about people opposed to fluoridation being crazy have got most of their information from this movie made by Stanley Kubrick in 1964. And, you know, it's a great movie. It's a funny movie. But quite frankly, opponents of fluoridation like myself have been researching this for 14 years, get very irritated when journalists think they're being original and funny, citing Dr. Strangelove and tin-foiled hats and conspiracy theories, using all these kind of labels to denigrate opponents of fluoridation instead of grappling with the arguments. So I think it's about time, and that's why I've written a book on this, The Case Against Fluoride. And part of the powerful politics that keeping it there is this kind of outburst from the Village Voice and the other newspapers. They do have an inside track with editors, unfortunately, and they can easily sway their opinions with very, very little. But as you're right, the naturally occurring fluoride in the water is the fluoride that leaches out of rocks. Just because it's natural does not make it safe, incidentally. Arsenic is natural, but that doesn't make arsenic safe to drink in drinking water. And in fact, in the case of natural fluoride, millions of people worldwide have had their lives ruined by fluoride. Millions of people in India, China, parts of Africa, Mexico, have literally had their bones wrecked by fluoride. And also, the evidence is getting clearer that it's having impacts on their soft tissues as well. All of that, of course, is being ignored. The chemical that we use to fluoridate the drinking water is actually a hazardous waste. It's derived from the phosphate fertilizer industry. It's from the two gases that used to decimate the local environment, hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride. And these gases are liberated when you heat up phosphate rock with sulfuric acid to make soluble phosphate for fertilizer. And for about 100 years, these gases caused a lot of environmental damage. Eventually, they were required to put scrubbers on, a spray of water, and that converts these two very toxic gases into a substance called hexafluorosilicic acid. And this is where the story gets a bit like Monty Python, because this stuff cannot be dumped into the sea by international law, and it can't be dumped locally because it's far too concentrated. But if somebody was to buy this stuff from them, it stops being labeled a hazardous waste and incidentally being protected by hazardous waste regulations. It becomes a product. And as such, it's then put into our drinking water. So if it goes into the air, it's a pollutant. If it goes into the sea, it's a pollutant. If it goes into local water near the phosphate plants, it's a pollutant. But magically, when it's put into the drinking water, it becomes safe for our kids to drink. It's absolutely preposterous, but it also saves the phosphate fertilizer a lot of money.
Even though they spend, I heard, up to $24 million a year for the process of fluoridating the water in Manhattan, Queens, and Kings County.
Yeah, well, of course, it is a very, very large water supply to America's largest city. And, of course, it would be much, much more expensive than that if they actually used pharmaceutical-grade sodium fluoride, which is an alternative. If they used the pharmaceutical grade, then they couldn't possibly do this. And that if you wanted to continue fluoridating water, the more rational and sensible way to do it would be to make up bottled water. If you did it that way, you could use pharmaceutical grade. You could control the dose because you could tell people only to drink 1 liter of the water at one part per million. And you also wouldn't be forcing it on people that didn't want to drink it. So that's the alternative for others who might get their knickers in a twist if we start suggesting that they take it out of the water.
We are suggesting it, and I don't think it should be in the water. And I'm glad the city councilman is proposing this legislation, because I feel that if there was no politician maybe behind it, it'd be very difficult for a group to do it on their own. We had Attorney Paul Bieber on before. He's the president of the New York Coalition Against the Fluoridation of Water. He had sort of listed a procedure of how to do it if you weren't a politician. And it's quite an exhausting process. But in your book and in your presentation on YouTube, The Case Against Fluoride, the toxicity levels vary, and there's 1% of human beings that are highly sensitive to fluoride. Paul, could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, this is exactly what you would expect, by the way. Whenever you've got a toxic substance, people don't react to the same in the same way. You get a whole range of sensitivity. Some people in your population will be very resistant to its toxicity. Most people have an average response. But a few people will have will be very, very sensitive to it. And it is about, we think, about 1% of the population that do react even at these so-called low levels of one part per million. And I should say, when you start using the words like low and high, you have to tie it to some kind of base. And I think the best reference for whether fluoride levels are high or low is the level in mother's milk. The level in mother's milk can be as low as 0.004 parts per million. So when people talk about one part per million being low and not to worry about it, in actual fact, it's 250 times higher than the level in mother's milk. Or to put it another way, parents who are bottle feeding their babies right now in New York City are giving their baby 250 times more fluoride than nature intended, certainly 250 times more than a breastfed baby would get. And is that a wise thing to do? Absolutely not, especially now that we have 24 studies from China, from India, from Iran, and Mexico, which indicate an association between moderate exposures to fluoride and lowering of IQ in children. And what parent, what politician could possibly justify a program which may reduce tooth decay by a very small amount, but at the same time may risk lowering their intelligence? I mean, it's literally a no-brainer here.
You're raising another interesting point with something that I spoke with attorney Paul Bieber about, and that is the distilled water for infants formula. What we found here in New York, I don't know if it's in other places around the state or in other states, but it's very startling. You see gallon jugs of water, it says distilled water for infant formula. It's got an image of a baby on the label, and then it says with added fluoride. And then you think to yourself, something's wrong here because babies don't have teeth. I mean, their teeth have not come out of their gums. I mentioned this to Paul Bieber. He said, that's illegal.
It is absolutely absurd for two reasons. Number one, even the promoters of fluoridation now have recognized that the predominant benefit of fluoride is topical, is benefit. It works on the outside of the tooth, on the enamel layer, on the outside of the tooth, not from inside the body. And also, we now know from studies done in the last two or three years that the most vulnerable year for developing a condition called dental fluorosis, literally poisoning of the teeth, dental fluorosis is a mottling or discoloration of the tooth enamel, which now impacts 41% of American children between the age of 12 and 15. The most vulnerable year for the development of that condition is the first year. And this led, in fact, when that research was published, and also with the National Research Council report, which we may have time to talk about, came out in 2006, the ADA actually sent out an EGRAM alert to its membership saying you should recommend to parents that they don't use fluoridated water to make up baby formula. They got that message to the dentists, but they have not taken any steps to get that message to parents. Parents should be warned that by bottle feeding their baby with fluoridated tap water, they're increasing the risk of their children getting unsightly teeth, which have to be treated with veneers. Not all of them. I mean, there's a range of this severity of this condition. Most of them will get very mild dental fluorosis, but some will get mild, which impacts up to 50% of the tooth surface, and some will get moderate, which impacts 100% of the tooth surface. And some of the mild and some of the moderate conditions require treatment with veneers, which can cost $1,000 a tooth. Now, parents should be warned about this. Now, that's what we agree upon, that we both sides agree that the first year of exposure is the maximum risk for developing dental fluorosis in a baby. What we disagree about is how significant this condition is. For the proponents of fluoridation, they just dismiss dental fluorosis as a cosmetic effect, a cosmetic condition. It's just something ugly. But we, the opponents, consider it's the first indication that the child has been overexposed to fluoride. And we think, and I'm concerned about what it's doing to other tissues when you see this condition. What's it done to the baby's bones? What's it done to their thyroid gland? What's it done to the brains, particularly the brain? Because when the baby is born, the blood-brain barrier is not fully formed. And at this time, in that first 6 months or so, the fluoride can get into the brain easily. And, you know, what kind of mess can it cause there? We're not doing the studies in the United States or Canada or any other of the handful of fluoridated countries. They're simply not doing the basic and crucial studies. And they spend all their time promoting this practice, and any study that waves a red flag, suggests harm, is denigrated, or either the authors are criticized or the methodology is criticized. But what they don't do is to attempt to repeat the study. So we, as I said, we have 24 IQ studies done in these different countries over the last 10, 20 years. Not one single attempt in America to replicate these studies, or for that matter, in Australia, England, Ireland, and other fluoridating countries.
That's a really strong point. The establishment has not done studies on the harmful effects of fluoride.
There are one or two things which they have looked at. Hip fracture is the one that's probably been the most studied, and some studies indicate an increase in hip fracture in fluoridated communities. Some say no, the opposite, and some found no effect. But there are a lot of concern about hip fractures, because the first indication of fluoride damaging the bone, and incidentally, let me back off just a second. About 50% of all the fluoride that you take in each day accumulates in the bone. And we know from India and China that given sufficient levels, this can cause damage to the bone. The first symptoms of fluoride's poisoning of the bone are just like arthritis, pains in the joints, stiffness of the joints, pains in the bones. And nobody in the United States has ever attempted to look to see if there's a relationship between arthritis, some arthritic conditions, and fluoridation. Just haven't looked. And the other thing that happens is that as the fluoride accumulates still further, it makes the bones more brittle. And the concern here is hip fractures in the elderly. But apart from a handful of studies on the bone, they have not done the most basic studies in the United States to look for possible harm. Their attitude is, if you don't look, you don't find, and they have assumed that the absence of study is the same as the absence of harm, which, of course, it is not. You know, it's pretty sad. You get things like this. People, you'll hear this said quite often in public. Oh, well, you know, we've been doing this for 50 or 60 years, and if there was any problem, we would have known by now. Well, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't know if you'd lowered the IQ of the average IQ in New York City by one or two IQ points unless you did a study, and they're just not doing the studies. And what's more reprehensible about not doing the studies, as far as epidemiology is concerned, we have a godsend here, because we have a very clear, good biomarker of exposure to fluoride before the child's teeth have permanent teeth have erupted, and that is the severity of dental fluorosis. The more exposure the baby or the child has to fluoride before their permanent teeth have erupted, the more severe dental fluorosis. And so when you look at those gradations, very mild, mild, moderate, and severe, you're looking at children who've been exposed to more and more fluoride. Hmm. Now, using that as a biomarker, we literally have millions of children in the United States in each of those categories. I told you, 41% of children between 12 and 15 have some form of dental fluorosis. That's a huge number of children in each category, and so we could be using this to look at all kinds of problems, developmental problems in children, to see if it possibly could be related to fluoridation. I've mentioned a couple: lowered IQ, earlier onset of puberty, attention deficit syndrome, and so on. There are many, many things which are increasing in children, particularly neurological issues. We are simply not looking to see if this practice of fluoridation could be contributing to it. And you know what's so frustrating about this? Although I don't think that fluoridation is the biggest health problem or the biggest environmental problem confronting our planet or New York City today, it is the simplest one to end. In other words, if we had the political will, if we stopped lambasting Councilman Vallone and started to look at his arguments and look at the data and actually looked at this rationally, it would be as easy to stop as turning off a tap if you had the political will. And that's why they're getting pretty ferocious with Vallone. They know they're vulnerable. They know they don't have the science to demonstrate that it actually works. As I said, it works topically, not systemically. There's no need to put it in the water. They don't have the science to assure us of its safety. Rather than recognize this, this is why they go epileptic when people recommend stopping it.
You bet. Professor Paul Conant, he's the author of The Case Against Fluoride, How Hazardous Waste Ended Up in Our Drinking Water and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics That Keep It There. Somebody said your teeth are a window to your skeletal system. In this interview with Paul Bieber, he mentioned osteosarcoma, bone cancer in young males, specifically targeted males. I just wanted to also mention that New York City Councilman Joel Rivera introduced a similar bill to stop fluoridation in New York City, and that didn't go anywhere. So we have this article in The Gothamist, headline, Vallone, Fluoride Out the Sap, Our Precious Bodily Fluids.
There we go. That's strange, though. Yep. Go on.
While waiting for the city to come plow his neighborhood, City Councilman Peter Vallone Jr. is taking up another crusade, the fluoridation of water. Vallone is attempting to stop the decades-old practice of putting fluoride in the drinking water, something the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention called one of the 10 greatest public health achievements of the 20th century.
You know, that's such baloney. This notion, I mean, this gets quoted every day, by the way, somewhere in the world, somewhere in Australia, New Zealand, England, Ireland, or in the fluoridating world, somebody is quoting the CDC. This statement from the CDC, which was first issued in 1999, is based upon a pretty shoddy piece of paper article. It was written by two people, one a dentist who had never written anything, never published anything on fluoridation before, and an economist. It wasn't externally peer-reviewed, this paper. It was 6 years out of date on the literature about safety, and its evidence that fluoridation actually worked to reduce tooth decay in the United States was so pathetic that if a student of mine had put that into a term paper, they would have got an immediate F. It was absolutely absurd. I mean, what they tried to intimate, the CDC, these authors in this paper, was that tooth decay was coming down in the United States in 12-year-olds at the same time the percentage of the people drinking fluoridated water was going up. You know, the classic correlation does not prove cause and effect. A lot of things were going up between the 60s and the 90s, as well as the percentage of the population drinking fluoridated water. And they could have easily checked to see if there was any validity in this notion by looking at the way tooth decay was changing in other countries, including non-fluoridated countries, because the World Health Organization tracks this in 12-year-olds. And guess what? When you look at all the countries, tooth decay has been coming down in that same period from the 1960s to the 1990s, where most of the countries were not fluoridated. There is little difference today, if any, in tooth decay in children between fluoridated countries and non-fluoridated countries. And you can't find a relationship between tooth decay and any state in the United States based upon the percentage of the population drinking fluoridated water. So the evidence that this silly business actually works is very, very weak. I would say the evidence that fluoridation actually, swallowing fluoride actually reduces tooth decay as opposed to topical treatments actually works is weaker than the evidence that fluoridation causes harm or that fluoride causes harm. And really, there's a single issue here which has to be resolved. If people could stop calling each other names and actually looked at the data and looked at the arguments in our book, if they actually were to produce now a scientific response to our book, instead of taking an easy target of a politician and claiming that he's Dr. Strangelove, if they actually had the discipline of reading our book, or for that matter looking at a 28-minute videotape featuring 15 scientists, which people can find on a webpage, fluoridealert.org. If you go to our webpage, you can watch this videotape. It's called Professional Perspectives on Water Fluoridation.
I think the listeners know about this. We used it as a premium earlier this last year.
Well, I mean, if this is all rational stuff. I mean, we've got nothing to hide. We've got the arguments. We've made the arguments transparent. We've got over 80 pages of documentation. Every single fact in the book is referenced. So there's really no need to go around calling people names like poor Councilman Vallone, although I suspect his father was a pretty strong figure in politics. So he probably is used to being called names by now. But we really need people to focus on two things. The science of what's happening, the fact that the evidence that fluoridation actually works is very weak, and the evidence that fluoride causes harm is strong. I mean, the evidence, in fact, there's no argument that fluoride damages health, no argument at all. The argument is really whether there's an adequate margin of safety between the doses which we know cause harm in India, China, Mexico, and elsewhere, and the doses that people are likely to get in a fluoridated community. And that's where the other argument is really important, and that is that this is a terrible medical practice. And ask any pharmacist, when you put fluoride in the water, you can't control the dose that people get. Is there any other drug that you can think of where you could say to patients, take any amount that you want? No. Secondly, you can't control who gets it. The very young, the very old, the very sick, the people with poor malnutrition, the people with poor kidney function, blah, blah, blah. Everybody is going to get it. No control over who gets it. Again, ask a pharmacist if they know of any drug which you can give to absolutely everybody, regardless of their health, nutrition, age, what have you. You're giving a drug to people without an individual doctor looking at the patient to see if they're having side effects. So basically what people are saying here, that this is the only drug in history which has no side effects, don't worry about it. We have no federal agency tracking reports of side effects. You know, if the FDA approves a drug and it goes on the market, one of the things that happens is that both doctors and patients feed complaints. If they find something's happening after they take the drug, these reports go to the FDA, and eventually if you get enough of these reports, there's an alert, and eventually the drug may be taken off the market, like Vioxx and so on. It's absolutely standard. Here's the catch-22. The FDA has never approved fluoride for ingestion. Never. So the FDA has never been involved with water fluoridation and never been involved, incidentally, in approving prescription fluoride. It's absolutely amazing but true. The only place that the FDA has got involved with this issue is regulating toothpaste, a cosmetic. And there, if you go to the back of a tube of toothpaste, you'll see a warning. It says, don't swallow. And if you accidentally swallow more than the recommended amount, which is a pea-sized amount, get medical help or contact the poison control center. That's on the back of every tube of fluoridated toothpaste in the United States. Now, if you calculate how much fluoride there is in a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, it is 1/4 of a milligram. Now, 1/4 of a milligram would be 1/4 of a liter. We fluoridate at 1 part per million. So it's 1 milligram per liter. That means you'd have 1/4 of a milligram in 1/4 of a liter, or 250 milliliters. So it's one glass of water. One glass of water. Could you imagine if the FDA was regulating fluoridated water, they would require a label over the tap which says, don't swallow, number one. Don't swallow the water. Only use it for washing up, etc., for rinsing. If you swallow more than one glass of water, get medical help or contact a poison control center. That's if they were consistent. But it's one of the absolutely absurdities in this that the FDA has never become involved in the practice of water fluoridation.
It really is unbelievable. One important point, fluoride doesn't treat the water, it treats people.
That's right.
It would cost the aluminum and phosphate industries millions to bury this hazardous waste. We now hear from attorney Paul Bieber, president of the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation, who says, quote, "Fluoride has powerful, influential, and rich defenders. It's up to the rest of us to protect children by demanding that unnecessary and ineffective brain-draining fluoride chemicals cease being added to the public water supplies. Call your elected officials and tell them you want fluoridation stopped where you live. Our children are victimized guinea pigs in this ongoing experiment. It must end," end quote. Let's have a listen to that interview. Attorney Paul Bieber, welcome to the show.
It's nice to be here.
You are the president of the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation. And how long have you been working in this movement to stop the fluoridation of water in New York?
35 years.
Can you just describe the movement to listeners a little bit?
Sure. It's a grassroots movement in New York. It's been very effective, and it's effective around the country. New York, Long Island, Nassau, Suffolk have no fluoridation. New York City does. We have been able to get it out of Levittown. We've been able to get it out of Riverhead. It's nowhere on Long Island except Queens and, of course, New York City. We help groups all over the country, including, of course, groups in New York, because in New York we have an actual law that says that we have the right to fight fluoridation, fight anything having to do with medical treatment in New York. In any event, we're a group essentially national in scope, because whatever group has a problem and wants to fight fluoridation, they contact us through the Internet.
Amazing. And you're saying all over the world they contact you?
That's correct.
And then how do you reach out to them? Do you actually go to their country and visit and talk with the activists there?
No, we don't have that kind of a budget. If I told you our budget, you would laugh. I think our budget this year was $3,000. Okay?
That's a lot less than what it costs to fluoridate New York City every year.
How about $24 million, New York City?
You're saying $24 million is what it costs to
fluoridate New York City in a year. Imagine how many children could be treated by dentists, poor children, be treated by dentists if they had the $24 million.
It is really stunning. So if we back up a minute and talk about the tests that show that fluoridation of the water as a public health benefit of preventing and reducing tooth decay, how many studies show that this doesn't really occur?
There are so many numerous studies that it's impossible to determine. It's just phenomenal that even the state of New York, Board of the Health Department of the state of New York, through Dr. Kumar, has indicated that the amount of caries has not changed between fluoridated and unfluoridated areas. So we're spending $24 million in the city of New York for nothing, for absolutely nothing, except brittle bones and poison.
These studies also indicate that it's harmful to bones and teeth, and more than that, also our endocrine system.
Sure, thyroid. And remember that there is there's a little nasty one out there called osteosarcoma, which is bone cancer. And we have found bone cancer in young male children in fluoridated areas. These statistics are significant.
Have there been any class action lawsuits or any suits brought against the people, I guess the NSF or the fertilizer industry?
No, because the fertilizer industry is merely selling this stuff to the states. And it's the states and the cities that really should be brought in on a lawsuit. Now, California, by the way, has Proposition 65, which is California Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. It's the lead agency for the implementation of the Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of 1986, which is the Proposition 65. And what they're doing is they're identifying carcinogens in the water or any place. The first five that they're working on, one of the first five that they consider to be in the high priority category is fluoride and its salts.
In addition to fluoride or the fluoridation of water, this chemical also has other pollutants in it.
Yes, lead, cadmium, arsenic, you know, all sorts of good stuff.
Copper.
Mercury.
Really? They're also putting those chemicals into the water when they fluoridate.
That's correct. And now remember that fluoride is an enzyme poison. If a scientist wants to stop life in a biology lab, the first thing he reaches for is sodium fluoride, because he adds that and it stops life immediately. It's an enzyme poison. So when it goes on your teeth through the toothpaste, it poisons all of those bad bacteria. But at the same time, it's poisoning you.
It's really powerful that there was all these ads, I guess, in the 50s, showing fluoride is helpful to prevent tooth decay, etc., and people really bought this.
Sure.
What do you think is really going on, aside from finding a disposal for this, the phosphate fertilizer industry?
Money. It costs the states approximately $180 million a year or more to fluoridate their various water supplies. Since fluoride is a hazardous waste product, it would have to be disposed of as a hazardous waste product. And it would probably cost the phosphate and aluminum industries $180 million just to bury this stuff. So there's a $360 million swing. And so if you were the phosphate industry or you were the aluminum industry, you'd be thrilled to know that we, the people, have become the human filters of their fluoride pollution.
You said the aluminum companies also?
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit further on the aluminum companies and how this byproduct works in conjunction with fluoridation?
What happened in the 40s and 50s was that there was a problem because the fluoride gas that was flowing out of the smokestacks of aluminum and phosphate industries was killing the cows of the farmers nearby. So the EPA finally... wasn't the EPA at the time, but they came back and they said, okay, you have to put on something to hold that fluoride gas so that it doesn't go out to the farms and kill the plants and kill the animals. So they put these devices onto the smokestacks and accumulated this fluoride, but they had to find some way of disposing of it. So this guy, Oscar Ewing, who was the at that time was an officer or an attorney for Alcoa Aluminum, became the head of the Human Services Agency and immediately decided that fluoride ought to be put in the water and started the trials to try to get this working so that fluoride could be put into the water and that the aluminum and phosphate companies could get rid of it. It was also, of course, a huge amount of fluoride from the atom bomb because they had to use a lot of fluoride rock in order to get to the molecules for the atom bomb. And a lot of their people got very ill, and they didn't know why until they figured out it was the fluoride, but then they stopped all their examinations because they didn't want anybody to find out that it was bad for you.
They put these filters on the smokestacks that accumulate the fluoride, and then there are other contaminants along with that.
Sure.
How then is it brought into the water supply?
Yeah, most of the time it's in a powder, but it can be in a liquid also. It's brought to the water station, and then it's injected into the water supply. Now, remember that fluoride, unlike chlorine treats the water. Fluoride doesn't treat the water. It treats the people. That's the difference.
What kind of opposition has your group encountered when you go into a particular area with the activism to stop and oppose the fluoridation of water? What have you come up against?
Oh, well, you know, we're the zanies, we're the crazies, we're the John Birchers, you name it. They can come up with any name they can. But unfortunately for them, and fortunately for us, all of our evidence is starting to come to the fore. The osteosarcoma in young males, the fact that they've now indicated, the American Dental Association has now indicated that there should be no fluoridated water used to make infant formula for the first year or two of a child's birth because of the fact that the child would be ingesting huge amounts of fluoride, okay, for its body weight. Remember that body weight is very important in this. A 5,000 milligram teaspoon of fluoride will kill the average 150-pound man. But it's all weight-related. So if you were to divide that by 10, it would mean that a 500 milligram, one-tenth of a teaspoon, would kill a 15-pound child. And again, if you divided that by 10, it would kill a 1.5-pound fetus. So fluoride is a very, very dangerous, dangerous product.
Our guest is attorney Paul Bieber. He's the president of the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation.
We've sent New York the information to indicate that fluoride doesn't do any good. And all they have to do then is cease putting the fluoride in, and the government would save $24 million a year. And considering the budget problems that they're having, it really makes a lot of sense. And unfortunately, nobody has gotten back to us from the city of New York, despite the fact that we've notified them 3 or 4 times now.
In this particular case, what's your next course of action?
Well, we never like to hit people over the head. So we work with groups, any group that wants to work with us, we show them what can happen. They have so many areas to look at when you look at fluoridation. We have the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation, where people get a lot of their information. There's the Fluoride Action Network, also on the net, where they can get their information. We give them all of this information, and then we help them any way we can. We'll bring in some scientists if they want to fight. We'll do that. We'll bring in chemists. We'll bring in anybody. The key here that I want you to know about is this National Research Council. The National Research Council in 2006 made a report on fluoride. Now, they're an arm of the EPA. And a panel of experts spent 3.5 years reviewing and debating the fluoride toxicology literature, and they concluded that the maximum contaminant level goal of fluoride in water supplies is too high. They had 4 milligrams per liter as the maximum contaminant level, as opposed to 1 milligram for what this should be imbibing. It's not going to be protective of health, and it has to be lowered. But it's up to the EPA to decide what that level should be. At least 3 of the panel members believe, based on the evidence, that fluoride should be as close to zero as possible, which would effectively kill the fluoridation program in the United States, which might be why the EPA is years overdue in reviewing fluoride standards. That's something you'll have to ask the EPA about.
Fluoride in the water at, quote, all optimal levels is a 0.7 or a 1.2 milligrams.
Right.
Yet the National Research Council says
it should be closer to zero.
It should be closer, but they found that the
maximum contaminant level of 4 milligrams is much too high.
Okay, got it. I saw something. Now, maybe you can tell us a little more information about this. I was looking for distilled water to drink. But I did find distilled water, and it was specifically for infants. And so they had a little picture of a baby on with no teeth on this gallon jug of water. And then on this label it said, with added fluoride.
That's right. They can't do that. It's illegal. The FDA says that fluoride is not a nutrient. So if you want to add a non-nutrient to a food source, it has to be safe at 100 times the level that you're adding into the food source. So if you want to add 1 milligram of fluoride into a food source, it has to be safe at 100 milligrams. And at 100 milligrams, it's a virulent poison. They can't put it in milk or food or anything else. And the only way they get away with adding fluoride at all is they go to the water, because the EPA right now says, oh, yeah, you can add up the maximum contaminant level is 4.
It is really amazing to see this label with the photo of the picture of the baby smiling, and the baby has no teeth.
Yeah, we've already written to them about this.
And have you gotten a response?
No.
Okay, so what do you think that's about, putting fluoride in the water like that for a baby with no teeth? What is going on there?
Well, okay, breast milk has virtually no fluoride in it. If you add fluoridated water to an infant's formula, that infant will now be getting 250 times more fluoride than it would have gotten through breast milk. What's happening is, as a result of their stupidity, all of these researchers and doctors and dentists have put themselves in a position where all of these infants are starting to develop fluoro's teeth. Now, as much as they think it's a hardener, what it really does is it warps the tooth. It makes the tooth not as strong. And so as a result, there's a tremendous effort now to try to make sure that these children don't have the white spots on their teeth from fluorosis. Those white spots are like the canary in the mine shaft, because it signals that you're getting fluorosis not just in your teeth, but in your bones and in the parts of your body that you shouldn't be getting.
I just want to add that I read also that the fluoride molecule is very small, and it's not filtered by a Brita filter,
you really have to
use reverse osmosis.
That's correct.
To remove it, and even that doesn't remove all of it.
No, it doesn't.
Do you want to talk a bit about the Jennifer Luke study, about the accumulation of fluoride on the pineal gland?
I'm familiar with the study. I don't have it in handy, but I do know that it's not just the pineal gland, it's also the thyroid that is having a real trouble with fluoridation and fluoride. It's just amazing to watch all of these things happening. And the health departments all just sit there with their thumbs up their behinds, not doing anything about what this really is. Because there's thousands and thousands of reputations at stake. You realize that? I mean, all of these people have been backing this fluoride poison for how long?
60 years, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And we've been telling them for 60 years. My father was a doctor. When I got a hold of the Newberg-Kingston study, which was one of the first studies about fluoridation, I asked him to look at this thing, and I said to him, look, you know, there's something here that I don't understand. And he said, what's that? I said, well, in the fluoridated area, they talk about more cortical bone defects. What are they? And he said, oh, that's a precursor to osteosarcoma. I said, you're kidding me. He says, no. I said, so then they knew this in 1955? He said, oh, yeah. He says, because if I know it, obviously they knew it. In 1990, we had a study which showed young male rats getting osteosarcoma. In 1994, we had a study from the New Jersey Department of Health, young male children, significant study showing male children getting osteosarcoma. Harvard study, 2006 or 7, in which they said, yeah, there's significant osteosarcoma in male children. Osteosarcoma is bone cancer. It is deadly.
We're talking with Attorney Paul Bieber. He's the president of the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoridation, and he's been practicing for 40 years. Attorney Paul Bieber, what would it take from activists in New York City to help your coalition to get fluoride out of New York City's water supply?
Well, we do have a law in the state of New York. It was sponsored by Senator Johnson back in the mid-90s, which says that you can vote on fluoridation, and you can vote it out. That's number one. Number two, the groups should get together and try to set up a meeting with the New York City Health Department, with the mayor's council, because it's a waste of $24 million. And when the city needs all this money, it's really effective if we can cancel this process and use that money for the children. Now, understand something. The European Union has already banned the export of fluoridated water. The European court said that fluoridated water must be treated as a medicine and cannot be used to prepare foods. They're not allowing anything that has fluoridated water in it to come out and go throughout the European Union. Are they that much smarter than we are? The answer is no. We're just being put in a position where money talks better than health talks. And so we need people to be writing to the mayor, writing to the health department, setting up meetings, joining with NISCOF or the Fluoride Action Network to try to get these people to finally see the light. And the light is, hey, you can save money and not hurt people's teeth by ending fluoridation. If I told you in 1955 that one cigarette a day for 50 years was going to cause lung cancer, you would have laughed me right out of the cigar store. But we're telling you now that the addition of 1 milligram per day of fluoride, which is not really 1 milligram, because when you think about total fluoride intake, people are mostly getting 5 to 6 to 7 milligrams per day of fluoride from the foods that they eat, from the water that they're drinking, from all of those things, and from their medications. But if I were to tell you that 1 milligram per day of fluoride, you'd look at me and go, what are you, crazy?
So just like radiation, this poison is cumulative?
Right.
That was Attorney Paul Bieber, president of the New York State Coalition Opposed to Fluoride. As we acknowledge the 72nd anniversary of fluoridating public drinking water supplies this month, it's important to also mention that sodium fluoride is added into our food and drink and pharmaceuticals, specifically the fluoroquinolones. They're among the most commonly prescribed class of antibiotics in the United States, according to one article titled Fluoroquinolones, the Deadliest Antibiotics on the Market. Among the most well-known is Cipro, made by Bayer, which became a household name during the anthrax scare that occurred shortly after 9/11. Levaquin is a close second. All antibiotics carry a risk of side effects, but the fluoroquinolones are in a class by themselves when it comes to their potential to cause serious permanent injuries and even death. Levaquin, for instance, which became the best-selling antibiotic in 2010, faces thousands of lawsuits a year from people who have been seriously harmed after taking it. The reactions can be body-wide, impacting your central nervous system, musculoskeletal, visual, and renal systems, sometimes simultaneously. So let's see, who stands to benefit when the population is stricken with osteosarcoma or from chemically lowering intelligence, or impairing the thyroid gland, or impairing the pineal gland? A past guest said a dictator doesn't want a country full of PhDs and lawyers. This is one of many similar formulas. Hundreds of millions of dollars are saved through being allowed to treat people internally by distributing a lethal industrial waste into the drinking water supply, while simultaneously and indirectly contributing to the healthcare and pharmaceutical industries. This industrial waste, as you've heard, costs hundreds of millions of dollars to dispose of. Does this sound familiar? Consider the shows we've done with Dr. J. Marvin Herndon, whose scientific research exposed how coal fly ash is very likely being sprayed in the upper atmosphere. Coal fly ash is a byproduct of the coal industry, another expensive industrial waste to dispose of. Among the potential health effects are respiratory illnesses and related diseases from reduced vitamin D production in the body because of the artificial clouds occluding the sun. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.